Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Just an Illusion, EP, by D. Kelly. Narrated by Tracy Marks and Aidan Snow. Every man's life ends the same way. It is only the details of how he lived and how he died that distinguish one man from another. Ernest Hemingway. Prologue. Amelia, present day, 2 years after the tour. Last night, as I wrote about the crash, my hands trembled with such force, Karen had to take my computer away. I spent the rest of the night crying, wrapped in her loving arms. Everything changed that night. One moment I was making love to Noah, and the next, total chaos. There were only two things I knew instinctively that night. I lost Belle, and I was in labor. What happened after the impact has never been clear to me. Mostly flashes of memories, which are hazy at best. Not being able to piece together the particular order of events was driving me crazy. For months, I struggled with soul-stealing nightmares, until I read the first part of Sawyer's new journal. I'm not sure why he started with the accident, other than it was a coping mechanism he learned in therapy. But when he trusted me with his pages, all his innermost thoughts, it softened my heart. He let me read them because he wanted me to have a clear reference of what they saw, what they heard, and what they went through. He also wanted me to realize I wasn't alone in what I was going through. They needed to be able to lean on me as much as I was leaning on them. When I read his words, my world spun on its axis. I tried pretending I was reading a story, and it wasn't my life within those pages. But when I finished, pain shot through my chest, as if I'd been stabbed in the heart with a dagger. Each breath more painful than the last, it felt as if it were being pulled out, 1 millimeter at a time. Once I recovered from the shock, I was numb. I thought knowing would change something, make me feel better somehow. In a way, it did, but in other ways, everything was worse. That night irrevocably changed my life. It changed all our lives. Each of us lives with gaping holes in our hearts, which will never be healed, no matter how much we try. And in the beginning, I didn't try. I gave up. All I wanted to do was die. I now see it wasn't fair of me to put my grief above theirs, while each of them, in the midst of their own issues, willingly took on mine. They tried so hard to lift me up just the slightest bit each day. It wasn't much, but it was enough for me to not take a handful of pills and end it all. I thought everyone would have been better off without me, but in the deep recesses of my mind, I knew I couldn't leave Nate without his mother. He was the shining star in my darkness, even if it took me a long time to admit it. Motherhood wasn't ever my dream, and Nate's entry into the world was unconventional, but my son is the spitting image of Noah. He owns my heart, just like Noah has since the first moment he smiled at me. Last night, before I went to bed, I sent him the second part of my pages. It was late, and he was probably asleep, but I had to do it before I chickened out. Besides, I owe him those pages, and so much more. I want to work my way through this for him, for us, for our family. I'm just not sure I'm strong enough. This morning, I woke to the sun streaming through my window. The scent of freshly brewed coffee and cinnamon rolls leads me to the kitchen, where Karen sits with my Kindle. Good morning, Amelia. How do you feel today? With love in her eyes, she passes me a cup of coffee. I'm okay. Good. And you will continue to be okay, she says, as she places a roll on a plate with a fork and a knife for me. I finished the first part. The moment of truth. What did you think? Well, I may be biased, but I think it's one of the best stories I've ever read. Even if you don't publish this as the story you owe them, I think you could still publish it, and it would be a bestseller. The way her eyes twinkle confirms she's not placating me. I'm not sure if that's something I'd ever do. Mostly, I'm curious to see what he thinks about it all. You know he supports you in everything you do. He always has. That is also the truth. I'd like to stay and read the second part. Will you write the ending? You're welcome to stay and read, but I'm not sure I'm going to be finishing. Not after last night. Amelia. She squeezes my fingers in hers. What do we always say? The only way out is through, I whisper. Yes, and sweetheart, you've already been out and through. Sometimes you have to go back and shut the door that was left open in your rush to escape. Another will open, but you have to first close that door. The tears begin to pour freely from my eyes. But what if I can't? My sobbing words fall on her shoulders as she pulls me close to her. You are one of the strongest people I've ever met. Not only can you do this, you will do this. I'm not saying it's not going to hurt, but losing him would hurt much, much worse. Why is he so stubborn? Why is he making me do this? Her eyes soften as she meets my gaze. Because 2 years is a long time to watch the woman you love wither away in front of your eyes. I know you don't want to hear this, but he's right, Amelia. You're not living, you're existing. There's a difference. Living hurts. No, sweetheart. Pain hurts. Tragedy hurts. Loss hurts. But living makes the pain less. It moves the tragedies into the past. Loss should be a reminder to live each day to the fullest. Live today like there's no tomorrow. Sniffling, I ask, how do you stay so positive? I'm not sure being positive has anything to do with it. There's a cycle to life, Mel. Everyone is born with a death sentence. When we choose to live our days being sad and miserable, it's a slap in the face to those who would give anything for one more day. Especially when those people are the ones who would move heaven and earth to make you whole again. It's time for your light to shine again. For good this time. No more peeking out into the light, only to retreat into the dark. I hate that she makes sense. Even worse, she's absolutely right. Karen, can you call Anna? I'm going to take a shower. Tell her to bring her Kindle and tequila. If anyone else deserves to read this as it happens, it's her. Of course. But I also think we need to call Rory. Let's put all these demons to rest. Rory, she's got every right to be here. This divisiveness is killing their family. Okay, Rory too. But warn her about the sex and not to read it. I can't be responsible for traumatizing her. Not again. Consider it done. I'm not sure there's enough tequila in the world to write this last part of the story, but I'll try for him. Fortunately, a couple of years ago, Sawyer wrote out what happened that night, hoping it would help with my memory. All I need to do now is hold on to the courage to retype his words before having to find my own again.
Chapter 1. The Accident. Sawyer. 2 years ago. With the exception of Cadence, we're having a boys' night. Noah declined the invitation to join us because he didn't want to leave Mel so close to her due date. I know I wouldn't have. Do you think Noah is going to knock Mel into labor? Wyatt asks, and the rest of the guys snicker. But not me. I'm too excited. I fucking hope so. I can't wait to meet Noah's kid. My nephew is going to be the shit. Noah and Mel are probably going to have the most perfect kid in the world. The two of them are so sweet and even-tempered. Mel's got a little bad girl tucked away deep inside. It's a riot when she releases her. Like the time she punched that girl at the hotel? That was one of the best things I'd ever seen. Or like the time I kissed her in my bathroom. Damn. I know I'm not supposed to think of her like that anymore, but that was still one of the hottest experiences of my life, and I didn't even make it to second base. Noah is a lucky bastard. Sawyer, Luther wants to talk to you, Mac calls out, catching my attention. I love talking to Luther. We could shoot the shit for hours, but typically not at night. He likes to stay focused on the road when it's dark. "Hey, Luther, what's up?" I ask, climbing up to the front. "You see that?" he asks, gesturing in front of us. My guess is it's still a few miles out. About a quarter mile ahead of us, all I see is Noah's bus and fog. Lots and lots of dense fog. "Where's the next exit?" "About 5 miles ahead," he replies. "Call it. Tell the drivers to get off for the night." "You got it, boss." We don't take chances with weather. I'm extra conservative that way, but I've seen people die before their time in tragic ways. I'm not going to be responsible for someone else's death because my tour takes precedence. Fuck no. Life takes precedence. "Guys," I call out, "we're stopping for the night. Bad fog up ahead." My phone is already in my hand and I'm calling Noah. Suddenly, grabbing onto the wall for support, a wave of nausea strikes me. "What's up, Sawyer?" Noah sounds happy as can be. "Hey, we wanted to give you a heads up. We're pulling off the freeway in about 5 miles for the night. Have you noticed the fog out there? It's insane, so we're calling..." My words are cut off when I see the explosion of light ahead of us. On the other end of the line, I'm met with blood-curdling screams before the call drops completely. The sound of metal against metal carries through the night. It's muted by our soundproofed bus, but still audible. I'm not sure what the hell just happened, but I instinctively know it's about to change our lives. My heart races as Luther slows the bus and talks to the other drivers, telling them to do the same. My mind is processing a million thoughts a minute as the guys yell, trying to understand what the fuck just happened. "Call for help. Tell them we're going to need choppers." Luther is moving before I even get the words out of my mouth. They hadn't even entered the fog yet, but something took out their bus. As soon as our bus stops, I'm off and running. I'm shaking like a leaf and have no idea how my feet are even moving beneath me. All I do know is I need to get to Noah fast. Something is wrong with him. I can feel it. Please, God, protect my family. "Holy shit, Sawyer! Holy shit!" Wyatt's screams travel through the night air behind me. The ominous fog is still a bit in the distance, leaving the devastating scene in front of us clear and vivid. I'll never be able to erase this from my mind. The entire front quarter of the bus has been sheared off and is 10 feet away with a massive delivery truck impaled in it. The road is littered with glass and debris, and jagged metal and sparking electrical wires make it difficult to determine how to get inside. My thoughts continue to race as I cry out frantically for Noah, Mel, and Belle. My heart sinks in my chest, knowing there's no possible way Harold survived the impact. Hell, I'm not sure any of them could have. The bus is askew on its side, blocking the entire roadway. "Noah! Mel! Belle, please answer me! Where are you?" My frantic cries are balanced on a sob as I fight back my tears. I can't lose my shit, not yet. They could still be okay. We have the safest buses in the industry. They have to be okay. Mac and Ryan are right behind me, and the echoes of Warren and Darren arguing in the distance about who will take Cadence back to the bus catch up to my ears. "Noah, please, answer me!" I scream. The electrical system is sparking like crazy, and someone is working on spraying it down with a fire extinguisher, but I'm just focused on getting into this bus any way I can. Turning on the flashlight on my phone, I carefully make my way through. Everything is in disarray. The kitchen and living area items are commingled. Everything seems to be piled on top of something else. The impact was so significant it eradicated all the safety options put in place to keep the furniture down. My gut is screaming. No one could have survived this. But I won't believe it. Can't believe it. Until I know for sure. The others are calling out, having made their way into the bus with me. Their pale, stricken faces take in the scene with wide, fear-filled eyes. "All right, you guys. Let's move things carefully and see if we can find them," I instruct, tears streaming down my face. I've never been so fucking scared in all my life. My family is in this disaster zone somewhere, but I have to remain calm if I'm going to be any good for them. "Shh. Do you guys hear something?" Darren asks. Someone is moaning. Thank God. It means someone is alive. "Over here," Wyatt screams. Mac and Ryan jump into action, moving the couch and table off the victim. "It's Noah." My tears begin to fall harder, but I don't care as long as he's alive. Falling to my knees next to him, I check his pulse. It's strong, but he's not moving. "Noah, can you hear me? Noah, answer me!" My wounded cries go unanswered, but he continues to moan. "Do you guys see the girls anywhere?" I call out as they carefully work their way through the bus, moving furniture one piece at a time. "Noah, please talk to me. Do you know where the girls are?" "Sawyer," he gasps, as if breathing is the most painful thing in the world. "Mel. My room." "What about Belle? Was she in my room?" I press, hoping to keep him talking until help arrives.
"Belle flew. She flew, Sawyer," he answers through gasping breath.
"What the fuck does that mean? Is she in my room, Noah? Belle, did she go to my room?" He gasps again, an awful, wheezy sound escaping him. Fuck, where are the emergency crews?
"She flew out. Outside."
No. He's just out of it. That can't be right. Before I have a chance to say anything, Darren runs outside.
"Someone go with him!"
I shout. Ryan runs after Darren, and I hold Noah's hand tightly. "We got you, Noah. Everything is going to be okay. Keep breathing."
"Mel. Find Mel."
"Sawyer," Wyatt says, leaning down.
"Go to Mac.
He found Mel. I'll stay with Noah." Wyatt is crying as he sits next to Noah and takes his hand from me. I don't want to leave him, but I need to check on her. Carefully making my way into the bedroom, I see her right away. The dresser is lying across her lower legs and her head is bleeding, but she's awake. Before I can lean down and check her out, Darren's wails echo through the night. I heard that cry when my mom found out what had happened inside Jay's house that day. It's the sound of unnatural loss. The animalistic cry you hear when someone has been left behind in the worst imaginable way. My heart can't take much more of this. We have to get them out of here before there's any more loss. "Princess, please talk to me," I plead as I bend down. Tears are streaming down her cheeks, but she looks at me stoically.
"Sawyer, I'm in labor."
Her words are calm. Too calm. She's in shock. Mac looks to me and down at the dresser. With a nod, I help him move it off of her. What we find under the dresser is terrifying. Her pajama pants are soaked in blood. I've got no clue if she's injured somewhere or if it's from the baby. If they lose this baby, it will kill them. It will kill us all.
"Oh, God. Sawyer, it hurts," she cries out.
I don't know what to do. She can't have this baby here. This is too much. Belle is gone. Noah and Mel. Harold. How do we tell their families? How do we come back from this?
"Sawyer, I know it's a lot, man, but you've got to focus," Max says firmly.
"Okay, Princess, tell me what hurts." She hisses and blows through her mouth.
"My back. My stomach, my wrist, my head, my legs. Where's Noah?
Noah is in the front of the bus. He's hurt, but I think he's going to be okay.
Belle? She's gone, isn't she, Sawyer?
Tears continue to stream down her cheeks, but she's trying so hard to be brave. I'm not sure, but I think so.
She was screaming. It was the worst sound I've ever heard. God, Sawyer, she must have been so scared and in so much pain.
Her breathing becomes rapid as she continues.
What am I going to do without her? And Cadence?
Mel's bravado fails as she begins to wail.
Oh, God! What is going to happen to Cadence if she doesn't have her mom?
Shh, Princess, we don't know anything for sure. Right now, you need to focus on you. We need to get you to the hospital and check on Nate. Cadence will have all of us, and we'll keep Belle alive the best we can. I need you to take a steady breath. She blows breaths in and out and groans when the pain gets bad.
Sawyer, where is Noah? Why can't I hear him?
Wyatt, how's it going in there? I call out so Mel can hear his reply. It's okay. His breathing sounds like shit, but he's still talking to me. He wants to know how Mel is. Unsure of what to say, I look to Mac for help, but he only shrugs. Tell Noah he's going to be a dad tonight. Mel's in labor. A few minutes later, Wyatt enters the room. Noah wants to talk to you, Sawyer. It's okay, I'll stay with Mel.
Sawyer, tell him I love him, and I need him with me for this.
Will do. As I make my way back to Noah, I can hear his breathing getting worse. Thank fucking God I hear the choppers in the sky. Being out in the middle of nowhere really sucks sometimes. Mel says she loves you and needs you with her tonight. Are you ready to be a dad? Noah looks up at me with sad eyes.
I'm so fucking ready. But I'm pretty sure I'm going to miss it. Tell her I love her. And I'm sorry for everything.
His voice is raspy, his breathing shallow.
I need you to promise me something, Sawyer.
Anything you want, Noah. You know that. I squeeze his hand and choke down my tears. I know he's going to be okay, but he looks so fucking frail right now.
When they get here, you need to go with Mel. She needs someone to hold her hand through this. I watched her with Belle, and she was terrified. Don't let her do this alone. Make them bring me to her as soon as they can. I don't want to miss this for the world.
He gasps loudly and releases a painful hiss. What else hurts, Noah?
My head. My ribs. I think they're cracked. That's it. If I could breathe better and stand up without feeling like I'm going to tear a lung, I'd be with her now. Promise me, Sawyer.
I don't want to leave you, Noah. It's pointless trying to hold back my tears.
I love you, Sawyer. And I know you love me. I need you to do this. Take care of my wife and my son. Until I can. I need my little brother's help. Please, don't let me down. Wyatt will stay with me.
Mel's groans carry from the other room as the bus is flooded with light. The emergency crew's voices are getting louder as they come closer. I'm so fucking relieved they're here. I promise, Noah, you won't miss anything. I'll make sure of it. Is this the first victim? One of the flight medics asks. Yes, this is my brother, Noah Weston. His lungs are bad. His wife is pregnant in the back of the bus. She's in labor.
Show us where she is,
the other medic says as the first one attends to Noah. Two more medics climb on the bus behind him as I stand to lead them to Mel. Once we get in the room, I fill them in. She was pinned under that dresser over there. I don't know if the blood is from an injury or the baby.
Ma'am, when is your baby due?
He asks Mel. Mel's only reply is a groan. She's due today. I bend down so she can squeeze my hand. Wyatt goes back to Noah as another medic comes in and reaches for her free hand. Mel screams when he lifts her wrist.
She's got a dislocated wrist. This is going to hurt, but I'm going to pop it back into place and splint it. You'll feel better once it's splinted.
Shouldn't a doctor do that? I ask, hoping they can wait.
My name is Dr. Michaels. I'm a trauma physician at Harborside, where we're transporting your brother and his wife. We've got the best medical team and equipment in the state. Trust me, this has to be done.
He turns to the other medic. Cut off her pants and assess her injuries. Taking Mel's hand from mine, he quickly runs an IV and gives her hand back to me when he finishes. Within seconds, he pops her wrist back into place, and Mel screams in pain. Wyatt rushes into the room.
Noah wants to know why she's screaming.
Dislocated wrist. How's he doing?
I hate not being able to be in two places at once. Even if he hadn't asked me, though, I'd never leave Princess alone.
They're getting ready to put tubes in his chest. He's got a collapsed lung. The doctor said it couldn't wait.
Dr. Michaels looks at the other paramedic and tilts his head toward the front of the bus.
I need to get back to him. She goes first. Get her on the board. She's dilated to 8 centimeters, and we need to know if we're dealing with any pelvic fractures. If she can hold out, no meds. The rapid scan is waiting, and the second chopper is en route.
The paramedic agrees to the plan, and the doctor heads back to Noah.
She's got quite a few deep cuts on her legs, probably from the dresser, the medic tells us as another medic joins him to get Mel on the board. It doesn't look like any blood is from the baby. How the hell is she so beat up but her abdomen untouched?
The bar, the soundproofing, and Winnie the Pooh,
Mel replies through a groan. They pause to see if she continues, needing as much history as possible.
I held on to the metal bar by the bed when we were hit. That's how my wrist got fucked up. When I flew up, I slammed against the wall, and my head hit the bar, but my belly was cushioned by all the soundproofing. Then when the bus flipped on its side, my wrist snapped, and I lost my grip and I fell. So did Pooh. My belly landed sideways on him.
Turning to the medics, I filled them in. My brother had a bar attached to the wall at the head of the bed, so she could get out of bed easily while pregnant. The walls in here are covered in soundproofing, and Pooh is a 3-by-5-foot stuffed animal I bought for the baby. Mel slept with him to take pressure off her lower back. Suddenly, the sound of a heartbeat echoes through the room.
Baby sounds good on the monitor. Heartbeat is a little fast, but I don't think it's anything to worry about. Call in and make sure OB is on standby in the trauma center, the first medic says to the second before they carry her out of the room on the board.
Noah,
Mel calls out when she sees him on the floor.
I love you, Noah. Please fight, baby.
She's crying. And after seeing the tube hanging out of one side of his chest, so am I.
I'm good, baby. You take care of Nate, and I'll be there soon. I love you so much. Be strong, Amelia. You've got this.
Noah.
You promised me, Sawyer. Take care of them. Please. You got it.
But only until you get there.
Has anyone called my parents? I ask.
Mac speaks up for the first time in a while.
Warren did. They're on their way with everyone. They'll arrive in a couple of hours.
I've never heard Mac sound so solemn before. When we exit the bus, I spot Darren about 15 yards away. He's on the ground, crying and rocking with Bell's limp body clutched in his arms. Ryan is trying to talk to him, as are the first responders. But he's ignoring them. I turn away quickly and throw up in the roadway. My psyche can't handle this shit. My best friend is in agony, and I can't do anything to help him right now. Mac's arm is on my shoulder, and he turns me to face him.
Go with Mel. Darren is in shock. We'll get him to the hospital, too. Just give him time to hold her one last time. It's the only goodbye he's going to get. Cadence. She's with Warren, and she's fine. We got this. But Mel needs you, and they're about to take off. Go, Sawyer, now.
His firm tone brings me back to the here and now. Breaking into a run, I hop into the chopper just in time.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?